Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. When we step out on a weekend to have a bite of Tex-Mex or Mexican, we can more often than not expect something cheesy, maybe even fried. It's tasty, no doubt, but it's probably not authentically Mexican. Truly authentic Mexican food has its roots in indigenous traditions, traditions that carry over to the present day. Tomatoes, chiles, beans, squash, and even the occasional stray turkey, rabbit, or fish. These were ingredients common to the indigenous diet hundreds, even thousands of years ago. San Antonio native and chef Adan Medrano employs these traditional ingredients to recreate authentic dishes and create innovative new ones. His second cookbook out this month is Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. Medrano joined us by phone from Houston to talk about how his upbringing in Westside San Antonio continues to inform his palate.
I think I'm like every other Chicano, Mexican American, Latinx, indigenous, Native American person who lived on the West Side. We were economically poor, but culinarily and culturally rich. And so even though we did not have economic resources because of the deprivation of being politically and economically out of the mainstream through the historical things that happened, we were nonetheless able to develop very rich foods. I think everybody on the West Side, the South Side, has traditions like this food. My mother would cook in the molcajete. She would make everything from scratch. My father would bring home lots of vegetables, turnips, bell peppers. And so we always had food that was very natural and very close to the land. And I continue that feeling. And I think that most of the families on the West Side have this feeling. Unfortunately, in the recent times, with the introduction of fast foods and continued economic segregation, we have deserts, food deserts on the West Side. And we eat lots of fatty foods because of the way that corporations are structured. If you think of the obesity in our community, it's so frightening. It's killing us. Bad food that was culturally sanitized is killing us. And we have to get back to the original food, number one, because it's healthy, but I think most of all, because it's really delicious.
Well, Adan, your latest book is called Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. There's already two questions I want to ask about that title. So first of all, let's ask about Don't Count the Tortillas. Where did that phrase come from?
It came from my mom admonishing me. I was about 6 years old. I was crouched at the table looking at her making tortillas. She was really fast. That's what I write in my book. And she was making these tortillas. And I was in first grade by then, and I was learning arithmetic. So I thought, oh, I wonder how many there are. And I started counting one, two. And she says, las tortillas no se cuentan. Don't count the tortillas. They're too special. They're too sacred. This is not a commodity that you can take for granted and count. It's bigger than you are. Learn to appreciate food. Learn to appreciate the sacredness of what we're doing now, because it will turn into hospitality for others. And another reason you never count the tortillas is because if people come over, you don't start counting to see how many you will have left. You simply offer. You offer out of your generosity, out of your grandness. This is the type of hospitality that is central to Texas Mexican cooking. But that's the origin, is that many dichos we have in our community, the Mexican American community, we have many dichos that contain wisdom. And for us, because we were deprived of access to the publishing centers of the society, the printing press, the newspapers, we were able to bank on the richness of our oral traditions, which is the way we passed on science and knowledge and philosophies and prayers. And so the dichos that we have so much meaning. So that's why I wanted to use it, because it's just a wonderful way to show how expressive and rich our culture is, culinarily and otherwise.
Well, let's talk about the second half of the title of your book, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. And you're not talking about Tex-Mex. Tell us the difference between what is Tex-Mex and what is Texas Mexican cooking.
I would divide it in two parts, the origin and number two, the flavor profile. So the origin first, the Texas Mexican food that I talk about is indigenous. The first peoples to step foot on Texas soil arrived about between 13,000 and 15,000 years ago. There is an excavation in San Antonio, just a little bit south of downtown. It's the Richard Bean site. If you go there, you will see strata of layers of thousands of years at a time, where continuously for 13,000 years, San Antonio has been the center of a civilization. If you were to stand on one of the mounds by the Medina River there, you would have seen smoke coming out and people were cooking. This is the origin of Texas Mexican food, because we are the descendants of the original people of Texas. So when you cook, we do roasting, steaming, we do lots of fish, and we use chiles for flavor, not for the heat necessarily. So the origins are very different. The origins of Tex-Mex, that starts around the 1970s, when Anglo restaurants begin to make very popular the food of Mexican-American families. And the second difference is the flavor profile. As I was saying before, the food of Mexican-American families, traditional cooking, the way we cook at home, like if you're cooking a fideo, you don't have deep frying, you don't have a lot of fat. It's a type of soup that's very nutritious, and it has fresh onions, garlic. Another reason that we're healthy is because of the tortillas made from corn, and those are very healthy. That's the flavor profile. And we use chiles, and we really understand the difference between a serrano, chile petin, chile ancho. These are all different flavors. Our flavor profile also has a lot of boiling, caldos, you know, caldo de res. There's wonderful memories of home. Soups are very important, and boiling is a process that is thousands of years old. When you go to Tex-Mex, it's fried food with lots of cheese. So the cholesterol is very high. So you have everything together on the plate, piled next to each other, and laden with cheese on top. That's not the way we eat at home, but that's the type of food that many people love and celebrate. So those, I think, would be the two ways that you could distinguish between Tex-Mex and Texas Mexican.
So it's obvious that there's a difference between the two when it comes to the health effects that it may have on individuals. I mean, here in Texas, we have so many Hispanics who are diabetic and or obese, not just Hispanics, but even just the general population. And I think a lot of that has to do with the expansion of this Tex-Mex flavor profile with all the extra cheese and the flour tortillas, which are not as good for you as the corn tortillas.
That's right. Now, my mother used to make whole wheat flour tortillas because they call it salvado, because it was cheaper than the refined flour. So the cheaper food was actually more healthy for you. And I believe that the obesity we have in our Mexican-American community is directly tied to the social context of the corporate control of food, both fast food and the Tex-Mex high fat, high cheese becoming so popular. It's not a matter of individual will. Oh, I have to stop eating this way. No, we live in a social system where corporate control of food is very, very strong. When you go to the supermarket, there are ways that it is packaged that you have to buy, and it's cheaper to buy the unhealthy dishes. And that's the cause of it. We have to rethink that. And I think the way we rethink that is by doing. And I think when you cook this way and you realize I can come home from work and I can do it really fast, it'll take half an hour and it'll be really nutritious, and it will remind me of the family I enjoyed this with. Instead of trying to teach people about nutrition and whatnot, we should do by cooking really delicious food. I think high-fat food, I think if you want to have it once in a while, I will eat fried food. It's delicious. It's a matter of not having it all the time. And the pressures of the society framework in which we live are such that that is in front of you all the time. And your choices are often very, very limited to that.
Chef Adán Medrano is author of Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. When we come back, more with Chef Adán. And one San Antonio school district is going above and beyond in exposing its students to rich Mexican-American culture and history.
So when you have a course that's titled, you know, Sacred Mathematics and Indigenous Arts, that's going to do something for kids.
That's coming up on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Don't let Chef Adán Medrano catch you calling Texas Mexican cooking Tex-Mex. This San Antonio native and Houston resident says Texas Mexican cooking reaches deep into Mexican-American ancestry and connects us emotionally with our food. How many times have you had a handmade tortilla or a plate of calabacitas, Mexican squash with corn and tomatoes, and it instantly transports you to your mother's or abuelita's kitchen? You can probably still taste and smell those dishes, and they make an instant emotional connection. Medrano is author of Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. It's not just a cookbook. Medrano says Don't Count the Tortillas is a study of memory and connection.
The earliest memories I have are about food, this type of food. Simplicity is beauty. Many times we get lost in artifice and machinations and trying to doll things up with all kinds of mismatched ingredients, whereas if you were to really settle down and look at what the earth has to offer, why gild the lily, as they say? There are flavors in foods that go together naturally and are delicious when they are combined. That's what food does. Food is memory. In the first part of my book, I do talk about the philosophy of this food in order to help share experiences about how important food is and how central it is to our life. But when it comes down to it, the experience of eating is one that has to be slow. It has to be mindful. And most often, you will be eating with someone else, and therefore, it's always a sense of community. It is stepping out of yourself and bonding with someone else. Those are the important things about the food that I write about, and the simplicity of the food means that you understand the food, and you're not just throwing things together. There's been a lot of generations of testing flavors, and that's why when we combine calabacita with corn, these are time-tested flavors that naturally go together. That's why they're so delicious. There is beauty in simplicity because it is profound.
And some of these recipes also have some uncommon ingredients that maybe people aren't familiar with, like chayote or hoja santa or piloncillo. Mesquite flour is also an ingredient that's in some of your recipes. But I think if people really were to go to just a regular HEB or any other supermarket around town, you're going to find piloncillo. You might even find chayote because most supermarkets now have an ethnic session, quote unquote. Did you keep that in mind when you were putting these recipes together, the accessibility of some of these ingredients?
That was very much a central driving force of how I collected the recipes. Some of the recipes are new. They're ones that I created. The difference between traditional foods and new foods is always based on accessibility, as you say. What I did in the book, the way I thought about it was, if people know about chayote and how delicious it can be, they will buy it at the store. It's readily available. But if you compare the chayote to, let's say, quelite, there's another recipe I have for quelite. I know that many people know this because I grew up with it, but now it's considered a weed, as is purslane. And I have recipes for that as well. Many hundreds of years ago, we ate it in the Tarahumara in Coahuila and Chihuahua. Still eat that. It's considered a highly nutritious food. What I would like to do is ask people to begin a conversation and try cooking these quote-unquote weeds because they're very, very rich. And when corporate America decided to concentrate food and food production and food distribution in the hands of corporations, we lost kelitre, we lost purslane from the streams of foodways, but it's still in our gardens, and we call it a weed. Pick it and cook it, and this way we begin to address the way that we think food should be distributed. Food should be very close to us. We need to grow it, and that way we begin to break away and break out of this monolithic corporate control of food that is building so many food deserts. And the bottom line is it's making food less delicious.
Chef Adan Medrano is the author of Don't Count the Tortillas, The Art of Texas Mexican Cooking. Medrano will take his Texas Mexican tacos to Russia on July 4th in a demonstration of culinary diplomacy. He'll present a food truck demonstration of carne guisada tacos and tacos asado de puerco with various salsas to the U.S. ambassador's residence in Moscow. There's more of my conversation with Medrano online, including some of his favorite recipes in the book. He'll also try to convince me not to fry my tortillas when I make my next batch of enchiladas. Hear more at tpr.org. Now that an ethnic studies course in Mexican-American studies has been approved in Texas public schools, many districts may wonder about the next steps to take. One San Antonio Academy already immerses its students in language and culture. It just wrapped up a two-week camp that expands on that tradition for over 100 middle and high school kids.
You are the present and you're going to be the future. And I can see already that you're going to have one fantastic future.
That's Rosie Castro, a longtime Chicana activist, talking to students at the Mexican-American Studies Leadership Institute, or MASLI, camp. Castro is the mother of Congressman Joaquin Castro and presidential candidate Julian Castro. Castro served as an inspiration for several students who attended the camp at the Bonham Academy in the San Antonio Independent School District. Natalie Ornelas is a 12-year-old going into 8th grade at Bonham.
Well, when I started researching about Julian and Joaquin Castro, I didn't really know about Rosie Castro. But, like, whenever I was researching it, I saw that she was a Mexican-American activist and that she was a Chicana. And that was, like, really interesting because I've never heard anything about her. So it was cool learning about her.
Students attending the camp could choose from several breakout sessions that explored the deeper meanings of ethnic and indigenous music, art, and culture. Director of the MASLI camp and principal of Bonham Academy, David Nungaray.
I think the best reaction was probably to the courses. So when you have a course that's titled, you know, Sacred Mathematics and Indigenous Arts, that's going to do something for kids. That makes them excited and motivated to learn. Fierce Like Frida, Conocimiento de Canción. So, you know, the exposure to a variety of experiences was really important. You could tell, like, in the opening ceremonies, you know, it was like, oh, this is different. We're understanding our connection to the earth. And so those things were like, ah.
Henry Bussey, a 12-year-old going into 7th grade at Bonham Academy, took the Conocimiento Through Canción, or Knowledge Through Song class.
The main thing I've been learning is about, like, the history of Tejano music and Chicano music and Chicanx music, corridos, mariachi. We've been working on corridos that we made about someone who is an activist. Our last speaker, the one today, was Rosie Castro, and my group just happened to pick Rosie Castro as the person we have to write a corrido about.
Corridos are typically Spanish language ballads about activists, revolutionary heroes, or social justice. Evelyn Salazar and her fellow students chose to write a corrido about a San Antonio labor leader in her Conocimiento class.
We got Emma Tenayuca.
And what did you learn about Emma Tenayuca?
She was a protester, and she got arrested 3 times for protesting and disturbance of peace.
You didn't hear the air quotes Eveline made with her fingers when she said disturbance of the peace. The guest speaker at the Masli camp's final day, Rosie Castro, was herself inspired by what she saw that day and by the promise of a Mexican-American studies curriculum in Texas schools.
To me, these folks that pushed for MAS, for the Mexican-American Studies, are really heroes. Many of them were the newer generation, and they understood the need for this program. Hopefully one day these kinds of programs will reach so many people that there is a genuine regard for everyone's history, not just ours, but everyone's history, and that there's a genuine understanding of our culture and of our heritage and our traditions, and that we share that with everyone else.
See artwork and corrido lyrics created by students at the camp at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Fernando Ortiz Jr. is our editor. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.